Good afternoon from the KTO newsroom. I'm Pablo Arauz-Pena with your state and local news update. Juneau residents interested in running for mayor, school board, and two assembly seats have the opportunity to do so starting this Friday at 8 a.m. Applicants who file and meet all the qualifications will face off in the upcoming municipal election on October 5th. City Clerk Beth McEwen says this year's filing period is earlier than usual because this election is vote by mail. She also says that anyone interested in becoming a candidate has to fill out some paperwork and needs at least 25 voter signatures to be verified. Assembly seats for District 1 and 2 are open. Three seats for the school board are also open. So far, six people have filed letters of intent with the state. Four of them are campaigning for the assembly seats. Longtime District 1 assembly member Lauren Jones has reached his term limits and is barred from running for re-election. Those who filed for his seat include Barbara Blake, Paul Kelly, and Troy White-Smith. Michelle Hale is running for re-election in District 2. Beth Weldon is running for re-election as mayor. Elizabeth Sidden is running for re-election to the school board. McEwen encourages interested parties to file early and not to wait until the last minute in case there are any problems with the paperwork. The filing period closes at 4:30 p.m. on July 26th. More information can be found on the city's website. In other news, yurts are dome-like, often insulated dwellings that have sheltered nomads for centuries on the steppes of Central Asia. But in recent years, they've cropped up as permanent housing throughout the U.S. and in Haines, leading to some to object to the local government allowing people to live in them permanently. KHNS's Corin Smith reports on what's become an intense local debate over non-traditional housing.
The question over whether yurts should be considered permanent housing is something the Haynesborough has grappled with since at least 2013, when the Assembly okayed them as long as they're affixed to a permanent foundation. But recently, the Haynes Planning Committee recommended prohibiting them as permanent structures. Existing ones would be grandfathered in. But going forward, any new yurt or similar tent-like structure would have to be relocated after 18 months. That's following complaints from adjacent property owners who complain tent-like structures are substandard and drag down property values. Planning Committee member Diana Lapham cited the need for uniform standards for structures in the Haynes community. She says building code enforcement is difficult.
We're running into structure creep because, A, we don't have enforcement because of all the turnover of the borough. We were in crisis management mode for many years, and we still are.
The Haynes Assembly recently punted on the idea of whether to limit yurts to just a year and a half. Instead, it sent the question to its Government and Services Committee, which held a more than hour-long discussion at its July 6th meeting. Haynes City Planner Dave Long, just 4 weeks on the job, reported there are currently 9 yurts across the town site. He echoed concerns from critics who worry about downward pressure on property values.
People have invested money in either residential, and they're the people that over time I see that have been here and have made investments would be most concerned about an alternate structure coming and moving in next door or on the corner next to the brewery. So I think that zoning is important. I think some zones would fit these structures better than others.
But to those who live in yurts, it's home. Nick Schlossstein, who runs a farm and seed company, argued those fears are overblown.
Our neighbor across the street just sold their house for their asking price, like in full view of our yurt. And I think you can look at the assessment values for all of the houses around us over the last 6 years and probably see that it hasn't impacted anybody's assessed value.
Yurt resident Evan Sargent says building codes should be enforced, but he asks why yurts and not other types of structures like tiny homes are singled out when there are all types of structures being lived in.
So I would support work to raise the building standards like some of you are talking about. I don't want a bunch of Connexes in front of my view. I also don't want a bunch of dead trucks, dead campers, dead jet boats, everything else, and we're not talking about banning those.
He suggested that some people don't like yurts because there's a stigma and that it symbolizes counterculture lifestyle.
So I think at the end of the day, we need to decide whether we're going to adopt the Alaskan principle of live and let live, or we're going to adopt housing standards in a enforce them uniformly instead of just trying to specifically cherry pick types of structures we may be don't agree with the type of people that live in them.
It's been a difficult issue for local officials to grapple with, and it's not going away. The Government and Services Committee, which received a referral from the Planning Committee, is taking more time. It formed a subcommittee to take a hard look at zoning and building standards with members of the Planning Committee. The next Government Affairs Committee meeting is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, August 3rd. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
Workforce shortages are plaguing industries across Alaska, and some say one of the reasons is a lack of child care. But those child care centers are struggling to hire, too. And as Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon reports, the traditionally low-wage industry is having an especially hard time competing for workers in a tight labor market.
At Cook Inlet Native Head Start in Anchorage, Executive Director Kanlage Hasutakuk Ethan Pettigrew is pointing out all of the key pieces of a new classroom. There's the LED lights glowing in the floor like a fire pit, and if you look up,
we've got a smoke hole that has a lighting up there so you can dim it and make it look like daytime or nighttime.
In many ways, the room is all ready to welcome children next month, but there's one giant piece missing: teachers.
We're ready to take kids. I just don't have staff. And we have, you know, we are looking everywhere.
Pettigrew is among the many Alaska child care providers struggling to hire. Fewer staff has meant, in some cases, fewer openings for kids and longer wait lists in a state already strapped for child care. And that has ripple effects. Economists say a lack of child care is likely one of a complicated tangle of factors fueling the broader workforce shortages across many industries this summer. Parents can't get back to work because their kids have nowhere to go. Pettigrew says he and his colleagues are trying everything they can think of, but they're getting little interest.
We're hearing people can't go back to work because they don't have child care. Yet I can't get people to come to work to take care of children.
Depending on who you ask, Alaska's child care staffing shortages reached a crisis at different points in the pandemic. For Pettigrew, it's now. The same goes for Christina Eubanks, executive director at Hillcrest Children's Center in Anchorage.
We're full and significantly understaffed. So our teachers are working, 50-hour weeks.
Eubanks says Hillcrest laid off staff last year when the coronavirus forced it to shrink its capacity. Then, when the center ramped back up, some employees didn't return. And now, hardly anyone is applying for the open jobs.
A year ago, I had placed an ad for these positions, and I had close to 30 applicants. And this time, I put the ad out, and I had one.
Eubanks thinks part of the challenge is that some people have reassessed their priorities during the pandemic and have yet to rejoin the workforce. There's also the current competition, says Stephanie Berglund, chief executive of THREAD, an Alaska child care advocacy organization. Berglund says the average wage across child care centers is about $12 an hour. And there are many other similarly paid or higher paid jobs open right now with more benefits.
Every sector seems to be struggling in the same ways. And so it just feels like there's more competition for the same possible workforce.
Berglund also says many child care providers don't have big profit margins. So
there's not a way or room in their budgets to maybe offer hiring incentives.
But at Bright Beginnings Early Learning Center, owner Susan DeLoach is hopeful. Bright Beginnings has four locations between Anchorage and Eagle River. And for DeLoach, hiring reached a critical point earlier this summer.
I've been in this industry for 40 years, and I've never seen difficult hiring such as we saw in May and June. And we were not able to enroll new families at that time because we didn't have the staff to care for additional children.
In fact, Bright Beginnings even had to temporarily stop care for a handful of families until they could hire enough staff. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
The state announced plans to gauge the extent of contamination at and around the Gustavus Airport this week. It's the transportation hub for the small southeast community and an active contamination site due to the presence of PFAS, toxic forever chemicals that are used in firefighting foams that and can linger in the ecosystems indefinitely. Local advocates say the state should have started this work a year ago before breaking ground on a $20 million runway upgrade project this April. They say construction risks spreading the chemicals even more. So far, the PFAS have contaminated more than a dozen wells in the town, which does not have a city water source. The state's Department of Transportation has provided water to those homes since 2018. This is KTOO News.